Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Volume.
Well, the 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. So don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. If you guys follow me here for boxing, you know that I am a basketball guy through and through. Covered the NBA for almost 20 years, and I love the competitiveness of this playoff field. It all begins with the play-in tournament, which has some blue bloods participating in it. Out west, you've got the Warriors and the Lakers. In the Eastern Conference, the Heat and the 76ers, which is going to lead to some ridiculously good first-round matchups. The Celtics are either going to get the Heat or the Sixers, most likely. Out west, young teams like the Thunder and the Timberwolves are going to wind up probably against a more experienced group at the bottom of the bracket. This playoff mix is incredible. I think it's going to make for some great matchups, some great gambling opportunities over the next few months. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code MANIX. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code MANIX only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One no-sweat bet per new customer. Issued as one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/promos for deposit, wagering, and eligibility restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
And we are back. Boxing with Chris Mannix, part of the Volume Sports Podcast Network. As always, I want to welcome in everyone that is listening on the podcast feed. If you are not a subscriber, get over to the Boxing with Chris Mannix feed. Hit that subscribe button. Make sure you get this pod in your feed every single week. And it is going to be a busy week on the podcast, the first show of the week. And I'm thinking there are going to be as many as three shows this week. That's my thinking right now. It's a huge week in boxing. You've got the Ryan Garcia, Devin Haney fight finally happening Saturday night, Barclays Center on DAZN. That's just a massive event. And that's worthy of talking about a few times this week. So we've got a show today. We're going to have another show before the fight. And most likely, I'm going to tape a third show after the fight, a recap show after the fight. So you want to be a subscriber to get into that feed and make sure you get all three of those likely shows this week. We got a good one today. Dan Rafael, the longtime boxing writer, covered boxing for the USA Today, ESPN, now has his own Substack. We run through some of the news of the week from a lackluster fight featuring Jared Anderson this past weekend. We've got some news in Saudi Arabia. The Matchroom versus Queensbury 5-on-5 is set. It is headlined by the Dimitri Bivol-Artur Beterbiev fight. That's right. The massive fight at 175 is going to take place June 1st in Saudi Arabia. We also talk about the Boots Ennis signing with Matchroom. That happened late last week. We didn't get into it, but that's a big signing for Matchroom and a big opportunity for Boots Ennis to stay busy in 2024 and beyond. So a good conversation with Dan Rafael. A little bit later on, Devin Haney, the former undisputed 135-pound champion, now 140-pound title holder, he joins me to talk about the beef with Ryan Garcia. Like, where does it stem from? Why has it gotten so nasty over the last couple of months? And what is Devin's plan for this fight with Ryan Garcia? He's going into it as a pretty significant favorite, and that's partly due to the fact that Ryan Garcia has behaved erratically during this training camp. But Devin's got to be wary of that power of Ryan Garcia, because that left hand can erase you in an instant. I think Bill Haney, the father of Devin Haney, calls it Ryan's goodnight Irene. And that is a apt descriptor of it, because he's put a lot of guys down with that left hook. And if Devin isn't on his toes and on his game, he can get clipped with it as well. So stick around for that. Good conversation with Devin Haney. All right, when we come back, my conversation with Dan Rafael. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Dan Rafael is back, longtime boxing journalist. He's got a terrific newsletter on Substack called Fight Freaks Unite. You can subscribe there or via any of Dan's social media channels. Dan, we've got a lot to get into on the show this week. But we have to start by looking back at whatever that was, Jared Anderson and Riad Mehrez this past weekend, because that was, I mean, I'm not a big UFC guy, but I found myself paying the $80 or whatever it was for UFC 300 when I was watching that debacle take place in the ring. Just to recap, Jared Anderson beats Riad Mehrez by wide decision. Anderson was 128 of 662 punches thrown. That's 19% connect rate. Riad Mehrez was 34 of 144. So landed 34 punches in that entire fight. The 144 punches thrown for Mehrez was the third fewest in a 10-round fight in CompuBox history. So his only goal coming into this fight was not to get knocked out. So he succeeded in that. But I guess the question is, with the focus on Jared Anderson and the belief among some people that he is the next big thing in the heavyweight division, watching that fight, how much did you put on Jared Anderson?
I think it was mostly Mary's fault. I mean, the punch stat is not the end-all be-all, but that serves as a good guide. And when you throw that few punches, I have to believe it's somewhat accurate. It's not that hard to count, frankly. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we can think of the action fighters that we've seen through the years where there are certain fights where you may have seen a guy land 34 of 144 in a single round, much less do that for the entire fight. So I place most of the blame on Mary because he just put his hands up at the side of his head. He slid along the ropes. He did not engage whatsoever. I don't know if he ever threw like a legitimate combination the entire fight. So he definitely has to take some of the blame. And as you mentioned in the Jared CompuBox statistical breakdown, he was busy. He threw a lot of punches, 600 plus punches for a heavyweight in a 10-round fight. It's a pretty good pace. I can't argue with that. You know, he didn't maybe land as many shots as he would have liked to, only at 19%. But again, part of that was because the opponent was so defensive-minded that if all you're focusing on is the defense, it's going to be hard to crack that nut, so to speak. So I guess if I had to spread out the blame, quote-unquote, I would probably say it's like 85% on Mary and, you know, 15% on Jared, only because you'd like to see Jared knowing that there's nothing coming back to maybe press the action a little bit. But again, if you've won every single round and you're not even breaking a sweat and you've got the guy completely under control, it's hard to get mad at a guy for not doing what he typically does. Because even if you take a look at the rest of his fights, he mostly has knockouts. So the odd fight that goes a 10-round distance with a guy that's so ultra negative, I can't really get too mad about it. And I know that even though the fight's, you know, was terrible, I know some of the people that are with part of that Jared Anderson team, they're not unhappy that he got in the 10 rounds. And it's good sometimes for a younger fighter to have some element of that frustration in a fight before you step up to the big time. So, you know, I blame him a little bit, but this is all on Riad Mehrez. I make the point that they should ship him back and make TSA not allow him back into the United States.
I mean, certainly not for a fight, because imagine showing up for a big event like that, headlining event like that, and just fighting not to get knocked out. Not that it's unique per se, but, you know, that's not how you
approach.
That was
to the extreme, though. That's the problem. I mean, we've seen
but not
to the point where they literally won't throw a punch.
Yeah. Yeah, that was ugly. I agree with you on the Anderson part where, like, if a guy's not giving you anything, maybe you just go in there and try to take his head off at some point. He never really did that, you know, during that fight. That's probably the only critique I have of Anderson there.
I'll just say one other thing about Anderson. I don't need to, like, defend him or anything like that. I do suspect that there was, you know, there has been some distractions in his world because he's there on the card Saturday night fighting in a boxing match. And it's got to be on his mind to some degree that he's going to court on Monday to appear before the judge in the most recent legal case he has going for him. So
yeah.
If there's some distractions, I mean, it's understandable. I'm not saying I condone his activities and his ill behavior, let's say. But I understand that life happens and you're not always going to be at your absolute best every day when you go into work. And even at that, he still won every single round. And by the way, let's just say for the record here, you had two judges that scored a clean shutout, which was obvious. I scored a clean shutout. And you had one judge, David Sutherland, who actually gave the 10th round to Riad Mehrez, which I find to be detestable because it will be lost in history because people just look, oh, that was a close fight. You know, it was a one-sided fight, which it was. But I just find no possible way you could even give the guy one round at all. Not acceptable.
I agree. There was no rounds he won. Not statistically, not to the eyeball test. It didn't look like he won anything at all. Anderson's the prospect here, right? And we're all looking at him wondering if he is going to be the next U.S. heavyweight champion. Now, Top Rank is not going to put
any pressure on him in the near future. Not that they could anyway. The heavyweight belts are likely going to be tied up for the rest of the calendar year. But there's a nominal plan in place to have Anderson in bigger fights in 2025 and potentially world championship fights in 2026. Is that the plan that makes the most sense in your mind for Jared Anderson? Do you still think he's, you know, capable of being that next heavyweight champion?
I mean, obviously, I love the skills that the man has. He's obviously got the size and the power. I'm not sure he's got the perfect mentality to be the heavyweight champion of the world. And I'm not like a hater or anything like that. But, you know, you see a guy on the way up, you look at the just the raw skills, you see the way he performs. What's concerned me about Anderson is his utter contempt for the sport, it seems, that he doesn't ever take an opportunity to not tell you how much he doesn't like boxing. And if you're going to be the absolute best and reach the pinnacle, I feel like no matter what your profession is, you can be, you know, whatever your job is, if you're going to be the best at it, whatever it is, you have to have somewhere in the recesses of your mind and your heart a love for it, or at least an enjoyment or a like. I don't know, you can be a freaking, you know, cleaning up messes or, you know, a janitor. You got to at least take some pride in that. So if he is telling you all the time how much he doesn't like it and he only does it for the money, you know, the chickens come home to roost at some point. So that's giving me pause, that sort of attitude. You combine that with the problems he's had outside the ring. I hope he gets that under control, and it's, you know, we'll chalk it up to, you know, youthful indiscretion. He is only 24. You know, he's still a grown man, but, you know, it's still on the younger side of things. He's got plenty of growing to do, both as a human being and as a professional fighter. So I hope the best for him. I picked him as the prospect of the year a few years ago. He's got all the skills and the tools you want to see. Now it's just a matter, can he harness it in terms of the top rank plan? Look, you said that the titles are tied up for the time being. There's no obvious pathway to that belt. Obviously, you know, they can move them to become a mandatory at some point, but even those take a while to occur if you have unified belts, because they use the rotation system and there's a lot of guys ahead of him in line at the moment. I think what they need to do is just, you know, keep him busy and try to find the best possible opponents that they can and continue to build his record, his profile, his confidence, whatever elements you think he needs to work on. And when he's ready, he'll be ready, and you go and you find the biggest and the best fight you can. If it happens to be for title, terrific. If not, you know, you got to wait your turn.
Yeah, the mentality is what needs to be monitored here. He's someone that has been very vocal about how he doesn't love boxing. He's just in it for the money. He said he wants to retire as early as 27, which is only about 2.5-3 years away. You've got to keep an eye on that, because when he steps up in competition, he's going to have to go through some fires here. You know, whether it's at the world championship level or a cut below it, you're going to have to see what this guy's made of. And, you know, guys like Murray and even Charles Martin and some of the other guys he's faced over the last couple of years, they're not going to test that metal in the same way guys like Hrgović or Anthony Joshua or even Fury or Usyk will ultimately do. So that's what I'm watching most closely with Jared Anderson. All right, so on Monday, we had the formal announcement of the next mega card in Saudi Arabia. On June 1st, the show will be headlined by the light heavyweight unification fight between Artur Beterbiev and Dmitry Bivol, a fight that I don't believe would have ever happened if the Saudis didn't get involved. So give them credit for stepping up and doing that. Also part of that card is the Matchroom versus Queensbury 5-on-5, the heavily anticipated, in the UK for sure, 5-on-5 between Matchroom and Queensbury. Some good fights on that card. You've got Deontay Wilder against Zhe Li Zhang. You got Raymond Ford taking on Nick Ball. I think that's going to be a pretty good fight. Let's start, though, with Bivol against Beterbiev, Dan. What we've seen of Bivol and Beterbiev over the last year, does that make you right now lean one way or the other going into this fight? Or is this a true kind of 50-50 coin flip fight?
First of all, it's a great fight. I mean, that's the main thing. It is literally, if you were to write down your list of, you know, a handful of the fights that you most wanted to see in boxing, I believe this would be, or should be anyway, on anybody's top, you know, list of the first, you know, two or three fights that spring to their mind, maybe number one, to be honest. As far as, you know, which way you might lean, having witnessed their recent fights, it is a 50-50 kind of fight. There's reasons to pick both fighters. A lot of people will look at Beterbiev and say, yeah, he's got tremendous punching power. He's obviously talented. He's skilled. He's a two-time Olympian. But he ain't getting any younger. I mean, he's getting a bit older now. He's taken some shots. And in terms of Bivol, you know, he is a tremendous technical boxer, not a big puncher at all in terms of those, certainly not compared to the better. Bivol was maybe the best one punch guy, you know, or a guy that breaks you down anyway, maybe not for one punch, but in terms of just puncher overall in the whole sport. And, you know, is it the puncher versus the skills of Bivol or the skills to outbox a better Bivol? And, you know, and I mean, Bivol can still crack a little bit the same way, you know, better Bivol certainly capable of boxing to a degree. So I just think this is a fantastic matchup, and I'm hard pressed at the moment to give any kind of definitive thought about who actually wins the fight. I got, you know, plenty of time to make that pick down the road, but I'm thrilled that the fight's happening. I agree with you 1,000% that if there is no Saudi Arabian money to back a fight like this, it wouldn't happen, because the two fighters had certain expectations for what they wanted to make, and the money frankly just did not exist, because neither of these two guys, as great a fighter as they are, don't have big fan bases. They can't go fight where they're from and draw a crowd because of a lot of different reasons. And so you have to find somebody that's willing to spend the money. There's no big outlet that's going to be have a huge license fee. They pay millions of dollars, just not at the level that two guys want to risk what they're gambling on. So, you know, when you have the folks in Saudi Arabia that have, you know, essentially an endless amount of money to spend on, you know, whatever Turki Al-Sheikh wants to buy, you know, if any fight that he wants, if he wants to fight, he can pay for it. I mean, it's as simple as that. And he made the decision and worked with his partners. So, you know, obviously he's done a lot of business with Matchroom and Queensberry, and obviously with Top Rank. They were to be able to do this deal. It's a beautiful thing. How long it's up? I don't know.
It's got to be one of the biggest light heavyweight fights in boxing history. I don't know where it ranks on that list, but it's got to be up there on that list. Two undefeated guys with this kind of power, this kind of skill set. It's up there. And I wouldn't frame it as the boxer versus the brawler, because we both know Beterbiev is not just a brawler. There is a method to his madness. Yeah, boxer versus the puncher. Although, you know, when I watch Beterbiev, there's a lot of technique to what he does, right? Like, there's a skill level to what he's doing. He just finishes it off with blunt force trauma. It's kind of what he's become known for. My question coming into this fight, you mentioned that Bivol's got some pop. He has not had a knockout since 2017. And it's not like every fight he's been in has been against some granite-chinned contender. He has gone the distance with some rather ordinary guys. So I'll put that question to you. Like, to beat Beterbiev, it feels like at some point you've got to make him respect you. You've got to keep him just from being on you for 12 rounds. Does Bivol have that kind of power? Does he need that kind of power to beat a guy like Beterbiev?
I don't know if he needs the power. What he needs is the accuracy. He needs to just be able to place his punches to at least let Beterbiev know, okay, this guy is real. He may not be able to knock him out with one shot, but he can score points with those punches. I mean, but obviously for Bivol to win the fight, it's going to be more to box this guy. You're not going to go brawl with Beterbiev. That's stupid. That doesn't make any sense. You may not refer to him as a brawler, but if you had to compare the two, which one is more of a brawler than a boxer, you would certainly take Beterbiev in that respect. My concern, though, is, you know, Beterbiev has been he's been cut a number of times. Bivol is a very accurate and sharp puncher, you know, so there's a lot of factors when you think about how that can go. I just think this is one of those kind of fights where you mentioned at the beginning of the conversation about this, you know, is it a coin flip kind of fight? And at least at the moment, I see this as, you know, I haven't looked to see actually what the official odds are. They just formally announced the fight on Monday, but I have to believe they're awfully, awfully close, or will be anyway. And one of those fights where I have no vested interest, so you just sit back and enjoy what I think is a great matchup, a historical kind of matchup. And I mean, I think both these guys are on Hall of Fame trajectories at this point. And you need these types of fights against your natural rival to prove your mettle. And this is that fight for both these guys. I mean, I know Bivol has the win over Canelo, and he's got some other outstanding victories. Also, Beterbiev has gotten a lot of quality wins and unified titles and all that. But when you really look down at the resumes, and this is, you know, I'll just put Canelo to the side for a minute because obviously he's a huge name, but he was coming up to a new weight class.
Mm-hmm.
This is the natural fight. This is like, these are the last men standing, if you will, in the light heavyweight division. They've got all the belts. They've had them for quite a while. It's not like one guy just happened into a belt and now they're going to, you know, go for the biggest fight possible. Bivol has been defending for years. And Bivol, I think, won his first title several years ago, and it took him a little time to collect the other two belts that he put together. But this is what we've all waited for. This is the summit meeting in this weight class, and it's going to be great.
You know, when I'm evaluating, you know, who I favor, who I'd bet on in a particular fight, I often look at, you know, the most recent fights. And you look at the two most recent performances by Beterbiev and Bivol, and they both kind of go in different directions, right? Like two fights ago for Bivol, I was wildly impressed what he did with Zerto Ramirez. A win that has aged even better given what Zerto just did at Cruiserweight to become a champion there. His most recent fight on the Day of Reckoning card, not all that impressed with. Lyndon Arthur is a fine fighter, but I thought Bivol missed opportunities to get him out of there, and I just didn't leave that fight feeling really excited about Bivol being at the top of his game. Flip it around, and two fights ago for Archer Beterbiev, when he was, you know, going shot for shot with Anthony Yard, and at times was hurt in that fight, I wondered if maybe has Archer Beterbiev missed his opportunity to fight this fight at his prime. Maybe he's lost a step. Fast forward to Callum Smith, and look, Callum Smith is probably never going to be as good as the sum of his parts. He's always kind of looks better maybe than he actually is, but the way that Beterbiev just systematically beat down and knocked out Callum Smith was really impressive. So I don't know which fighter has momentum. Listen, coming into this fight.
They both have good resumes. They both have a lot of good wins on their record. They've both done what they're supposed to do. You know, styles do make fights. It's the oldest saying in the book. Obviously, the Yard fight with Beterbiev was a fantastic fight, but that was sort of, it was destined to be that kind of shootout. Having watched both of these guys fight for any period of time, you know that that was sort of the fight that was going to unfold. You didn't know what round or, you know, all the back and forth. But in the end, it was still a clear victory because he didn't get the knockout. So while I agree with you, you look at what they've done in their recent fights, I try not to get too hung up on one specific performance. Because if you did, you'd drive yourself crazy. I look at maybe the more recent body of work. And as an overall, over the last few fights, they've both looked great with a couple of fights where they maybe didn't look great. But again, you know, in the business of boxing, the sport of boxing, you're not going to be perfect every single night. It's just not like that. And, you know, they keep winning. I wouldn't call the Yard performance by Beterbiev a quote-unquote off night. In the same way, I wouldn't say it was an off night for Dmitry Bivol against Lyndon Arthur. There's nothing wrong with what he did. He won but basically every single round of the fight, scored a ton of points, and kind of was having fun there. And actually, if you really examine it, there was a couple of times in that fight where he seemed like he was close to the stoppage. He just couldn't finish it off. I mean, I don't know. Again, it's sort of like we were talking about with Jared Anderson. You know, in the fight between Dmitry Bivol and Lyndon Arthur, the end result was 120 to 107 on three cards. What's there to complain about? I've never been one to hold the lack of a knockout against the guy.
Yeah. Completely dominant performance, that's for sure. So we're going to have plenty of time to talk about the 5-on-5 in the weeks ahead. But as you look at these five matchups, which are Deontay Wilder against Jaylee Zhang, you got Hrgović going up against Danny Dubois, Ray Ford facing Nick Ball, Richards versus Hutchinson, Williams versus Shiraz, which one of these gets you most excited?
Well, that's a great question. I hadn't really thought about that. I'll say this, just in terms of the overall totality, especially when you include the main event, because obviously this could be its own card. I mean, it's just,
sure,
they're doing this is so unusual. I was thinking to myself, because somebody else asked me about this, like, you know, this is a great show. It reminds me of back in the mid-90s when Don King was doing the big cards, and there was just one great fight after another on paper anyway. You know, they never know how they're going to work out in the ring, but at least going in, you were excited because there was a lot of interesting fights. I think this, and I've thought about this a lot, so I'm not being emotional about it. I'm not trying to hype it up. I'm just being real. I think this is literally the best overall pay-per-view or big mega card, if you will, since those days of the big Don King cards in the mid-90s. I don't really, and there's been a lot of good pay-per-view cards. I'm not knocking other promoters. There's been a bunch of them with a great main event and, you know, maybe one or two other fights. But this is like literally every single fight on this card has, I'm interested in. I mean, if Craig Richards, you know, a solid veteran, former contender or former title challenger, still what I would consider somewhat of a contender against an excellent up and coming fighter like Hutchinson, if that's the weakest card, which, you know, weakest fight on the card, which it is, but I still like the matchup. So if that's the worst, that's freaking tremendous because I love Williams and Shiraz. That's a fantastic fight. Two younger, undefeated middleweights who can stamp themselves as the future of the weight class in a division that's pretty on the you know, on the bottom right now. It's certainly one of the weaker divisions, but these are the two, it's the sort of shining lights of the up and coming guys. So this definitely gives it some pop. Ray Ford, Nick Ball, I think is going to be a fantastic fight. Love the fight.
Yep.
Ray Ford had a dramatic and exciting victory when he won the belt against Kolmatov in a tremendous fight. Nick Ball, we've seen him now for several fights in a row, always comes in like a little spark plug, just never stops punching and just a fun fighter to watch. Tremendous battle. Hrgović and Dubois, both guys who've shown some vulnerability but also some outstanding qualities. Also, very quality heavyweight fight. Now, when they announced it, as you know, Chris, they announced it's just a 12-round heavyweight fight. But you and I both know that come May 19th, post undisputed Fury versus Usyk, between then and June 1st, the title of the IBF will become vacant. This fight will become, for the vacant IBF title, like 99% chance that will be the case. So that will upgrade the level of that matchup. And Wilder, Zhang, that's like, you know, yeah, they're coming off losses, but I mean, good Lord, it's like the right hand of Deontay against the left hand of Zhang. Whoever's going to land first is probably going to win by a knockout. And it's a must win for both these guys. They're sort of in the old, they're older. They're, you know, obviously in the twilight of their career. And it's a career savior for whoever wins this fight. So you say, which fight do I like the best? Good Lord, I don't know. Which one do you like the best? I'll turn interviewer this time. Which one do you like the best?
I tell you, I've got to lean towards Wilder and Zhang just because it is bombs away. And it really is win or go home for both these guys. When we kind of say that a lot when it comes to boxing, and it rarely ever is, but the pathway back for either one of them, if they absorb a second straight loss on this level, it's going to be arduous, and it's not going to be particularly lucrative, I would imagine, you know, if they're coming off double back-to-back losses. So that's the one that appeals to me the most, but I'm with you. Not only are the fights on the quote-unquote undercard relevant, but they're also really well matched, right? Like sure. the Ammo Williams fight, you're looking at two guys that can bang and two guys that believe they belong on a championship level, and the winner will take that big step forward to the championship level. I would have loved it if Nick Ball could have completed the comeback against Ray Vargas to make this a title unification fight against Ray Ford, but I love the style, right? Nick Ball does not stop coming, and Ray Ford, even though he took the fight to Adamek there, he is more boxer than brawler in that sense. So you're going to get a good style matchup out of that one. I lean towards the heavyweights, the top of the bill heavyweights.
Well,
but
I want to say something about that. When you talk about the Wilder and the Zhang fight, the ending could be the most explosive on the card.
Yeah,
I think getting there though might not be, because I don't think it's going to be a great fight in terms of the all-out action, because they're both so, they're looking for the one shot. They don't throw a lot of other punches besides that. Not a lot of combinations, not a lot of activity. So round for round, you know, minute by minute, I'm not sure it's a super exciting fight, but there'll be a lot of tension because of the notion that either guy can get the fight over with literally one punch. Like I said, either the right hand from Deontay or the left hand from Zhang. So while I'm anticipating that fight, just in terms of the overall action, and it's also, you know, very meaningful as well, but in terms of what could be the best action, you know, sustained over the long course of a fight that goes, you know, several rounds or perhaps even deeper into the fight, I think you got to look at, like you said, either the Ford-Nick Ball fight or the Williams-Shiraz fight. Those two guys have been in some interesting matchups. I love that matchup. I love the fact that both these guys who are still on the younger end of things, you know, are risking their undefeated records. Not a world championship fight, at least not at the moment. It's not a world title eliminator. They're putting it out there. I mean, obviously, they're being very well paid, I am sure, because of the lucrative aspect of fighting on these cards in Saudi Arabia. But, you know, I tip my hat to both those guys to take this kind of matchup at this stage of their careers. They're still on the upswing. The loser, I think, will be able to absorb the loss and move on with their
career.
Bottom line, Chris, just an awesome card. And I'm not kissing anybody's rear end. I just truly believe that when I looked at the matchups, I was like, good Lord, that is a tremendous, tremendous card. And then on top of that, you got Better Bev against Bevel. So,
I know.
You know, what are we talking about? I mean, how good is that?
Incredible. And with the Zhang Wilder fight, there's so many like subplots, right? Like is Wilder going to be experiencing, what is it, ayahuasca, you know, beforehand that might, you know, make him less violent than he's been in the past? Does Zhang have anything left. I was so disappointed in Zhang in that fight against Joseph Parker because he had him hurt in the third round and then just went through the motions. Had him hurt twice, really, but in the third round, kind of went through the motions after that. Like, does he have anything left in the tank as he's in his early 40s as well? There's just so much. I'm with you. It could be a dull fight, like, throughout, but one of those guys is going to land something big, and that's going to make that fight, that ending, really dramatic. All right, a couple of things I want to run by you before I let you go. One, a big announcement by Matchroom last week that they have signed Jerron Boots Ennis to a multi-fight deal, a three-fight deal, which is kind of typical for Matchroom, is what I've been told. I wasn't shocked by this, Dan, because Matchroom has been doing business with Bozy Ennis and Andy Cruz, so they've had a connection there, and Boots is the kind of guy that wants to stay active, and say whatever you want about Eddie Hearn, but he keeps these guys active. They fight two or three times a year if they want to. What did you make? What was your reaction to Boots Ennis signing with Matchroom?
Well, similar to you, I wasn't totally shocked by it whatsoever. I think, and I wrote a piece about this on my Substack just recently, right? You know, in the few days after the signing was announced, that I think this is the perfect marriage. I don't always say that about certain signings, but in this particular case, look, we all know Eddie's a great promoter. Love him or hate him, but he's going to get the word out. He's going to scream from the rooftops about his guys. He's going to start talking about, Boots Ennis should be fighting Crawford. Pretty soon he'll be talking about Boots Ennis should be fighting Sugar Ray Leonard. I mean, that's what Eddie does. You know that. So I think Eddie has himself a real top-level talented fighter. He is not going to be fearful whatsoever. Anybody they match him up with, he's going to like his chance of his guy winning the fight. So without question, they're going to be shout his name, at Matchroom Boxing and getting the word out for him. So that's a great thing. And that's what Boots Ennis needs, because even though he's still on the younger end of his career, he's already got, 31 fights, I want to say. He has had some of the worst promotion for a very talented fighter that I can ever think of in my almost 25 years of covering professional boxing. Just a terrible, terrible job of being promoted. And I don't even, in his recent fights, of course, he's been on the PBC cards and TGB cards, but I don't blame them at all because he was never signed with them. So when he was on those shows, it was because of the Showtime relationship that he had. He was signed to the network, so they put him on those cards, but they were under no real motivation or obligation, if you will, to do anything specifically for Boots's career. They put him on, obviously. So he hasn't really had a real, his official promoter, Now Boxing, was like a glorified booking agent. They didn't do shows. They never put out any material about him. They didn't promote him. They had no social media presence whatsoever. Matchroom Boxing, it's the entire opposite. They're going to have the full force of everything that goes in with Matchroom, with Eddie, obviously with DAZN, and it's going to be, I think, it's the perfect marriage at this point. Now, I say that also, if Boots had ended up going with another promoter, if he had signed with Top Rank, for example, they would have done what they do also. But I think Matchroom and Eddie right now for this young man is the perfect situation. They're going to take him home, hopefully to Philadelphia, maybe somewhere in Atlantic City, but in that region, put him in the fight. He's got the mandatory, whether they'll get the Crowley fight done or it'll be some other mandatory that's next that Crowley doesn't take the fight. Point is, he'll fight this summer and then go try to get the biggest fight possible. I mean, maybe, just maybe, who knows? Maybe they could possibly lure Crawford. I doubt it, but you never know. But there'll be opportunities. The main thing is you sign the fighter and you figure out the big fight later, because they, fights have a way of making other fights.
Yeah, and I think there's a pathway to big fights that don't include Terrence Crawford. I mean, we'd all like to see it, because I think that's the most competitive welterweight fight that's out there. But I think there are other high-profile events that Matchroom can put Boots Ennis in with. So I agree with you. It's probably going to be the mandatory at some point this summer.
What is the big fight for him at welterweight other than Crawford?
Well, I mean, is Conor Benn a big fight? Like, you go over to the UK and take a Conor Benn fight?
No, I think the Conor Benn fight would happen in the United States, because they can sell
paper. Either way.
Okay, and they can put it on, the prime time and the normal, the DAZN time, and still and make hay from both ends of it. So I actually had talked about that as a possibility, because Conor still can't fight in the UK at the present.
Right.
But he certainly can't fight here in the United States. He's licensed. He's fought here twice in his most recent two bouts. So that's probably the biggest fight, but I'm still not sure, is there still a movement for them to make that fight that was being heavily discussed between Conor Benn and Manny Pacquiao? I have my reservations, only because if you can't fight in the UK, that's one thing. I still question whether they would be able to fight Conor Benn in the Saudi Arabian market, because of the fact that the cards that take place there are regulated by the British Box Board of Control, where he cannot get a license. So just because the fight would perhaps be in Riyadh, would he be able to get a boxing license? I don't know the answer, but it seems a little shaky. But yeah, I think that at some point in those three fights that he has with Matchroom. That I can't say that the Conor Benn fight will happen, but you have to believe it's going to be a high level discussion of will of maybe it will happen.
And the third fight to me is Devin Haney. And that wouldn't be for another year or so. But if you know, you got Haney Garcia coming up this weekend, if Haney wins that fight, and look, Devin has constantly chased the biggest fights out there. If he wins one or two more and wins a couple of belts at 140 pounds, then all of a sudden he becomes a lot more marketable at 147. The former undisputed champion at 135, now the unified champion at 140. There'd be a market for that. You know, two guys like that, you know, fighting maybe in New York City in a big fight.
Yeah, I hadn't actually thought about that one, but that would be tremendous. Obviously, you know, Devin's got some work to do for the next, you know, with the Garcia fight and then whatever maybe the fight after that. But yeah, that would be very exciting. The point is, as long as Boots does his job and wins his fights, I'm very confident that Eddie and Matchroom team will do their job and make the big fights for the guy. I mean, they have a track record of doing that for most of their fighters, so that's good for Boots. And the bottom line is, for the first time in his entire career, going to have a promoter that will, as I wrote, you know, actually promote him.
Yeah, and yeah, I have to imagine that Boots, who is a stablemate of Andy Cruz, had to have watched Eddie just lavish praise on Andy Cruz over the last year. Like, every time Andy Cruz fights, Eddie's in the ring right afterwards saying, that's the best lightweight in the world. That guy can beat Gervonta Davis. That guy can beat Keyshawn Davis. Like, he has done everything humanly possible to turn a non-English-speaking Cuban Olympian into a name in the U.S. And he hasn't gotten there yet, but he's built him up as best as he possibly can. I have to imagine some of that resonated.
Not bad for being what? Like, isn't Andy, what, 3-0 at this point?
I mean, yeah, 3-0. And, you know, we're having those conversations. I have to imagine that resonated both with Boots and with his father, who's the trainer and manager of Andy Cruz. Last thing for you, Dan. I want to ask you about kind of what has been going on, a little kerfuffle, if you want to call it, between our good friend Sean Porter and, let's just call it, the people of Japan, or the market of Japan. Sean Porter, who came out recently and said that for Noe Inoue to become a megastar in boxing, he has to fight in the U.S. Now, Inoue has fought in the U.S. in the past, but as his profile has raised, he has fought exclusively in Japan. He has fought in some big venues in Japan. Next fight's going to be at the Tokyo Dome. It's just a massive event for Inoue. But Sean Porter believes that Inoue needs to fight in the U.S. to achieve that next level of greatness. Where do you stand on that opinion?
All due respect, my man Sean Porter, who I've known for many, many years, covered his entire career, like Sean an awful lot, we'll have to disagree. This is a big world. The United States at one time was the destination, the end-all be-all for the top-level fighters. It was the home of the heavyweight division. It was the home of boxing, period, in terms of the biggest fights. It's just not the case anymore. You know, we don't have that type of fan base in this country anymore. We certainly don't have the broadcasters that we once did. And in terms of, in a way, you did say, like you said, he did fight in the United States. I know, because I was ringside for one of those fights. Mm. In Japan, he is the number one sports star. In Japan, he can sell out or come close to selling out the Tokyo Dome. They will do a gate in the Tokyo Dome that's on the level of the biggest fights we see in Las Vegas, like the Canelo fights that are taking place there, or when Tank and Ryan fought, those types of fights.
And for context, we're talking like $15, $20 million, exactly, right? Yes. Like real numbers.
So besides the gate that they'll generate, he's making, for his fights, he's making eight figures per fight. But the thing about it is, there's not a single bout that he could have, at least not to my way of thinking, that he could come to the United States to have, where he could come even, forget about, there are some fighters that will leave money on the table, even if it's a little bit of a bigger amount, because they want to do something. They want to fight in the United States, or they want to fight in New York City, or they want to fight in Las Vegas. This is so far beyond just leaving a little bit of money on the table. There's nothing that could come close to paying him the kind of money here in America that he makes in Japan. So for what purpose? At the end of the day, he's got the accomplishment. He's the undisputed champion. There's nobody that doesn't rank among the top couple of guys in boxing pound for pound. To me, he's number two at worst. And depending on what happens with the upcoming fight, you might even make him number one. Not a knock on Crawford, but because Inoue is being very active and Terrence Crawford has not fought since last July and has nothing scheduled. So you can't just sit on your ranking and just keep it forever. So he's at worst two pound for pound. He's making the biggest money that a guy in that weight class has ever made in the history of the sport, selling out arenas. He's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer no matter what happens from here on out. That's already a done deal, in my opinion. So who the hell is Sean Porter to say you got to come to fight in America? You know, in a way, if you read his social media, his perspective is, I love it. He's like, look, I'm willing to come and fight. I'm paraphrasing. Basically, if there's something worth it for me to come there, I'll fight America. He's not, you think he's worried about coming to fight? He's fought here three times. He'll fight anybody over here. But now all the other guys got to go see him because they can all make their biggest payday. Why do you think Marlon Topalis was in the ring with him after the fight?
Yep.
How do you think Stephen Fulton got on the plane and went to Japan? And we can go chapter and verse of his opponents. So why do you think Luis Neri's doing that to go from Mexico? Because they're going to be paid big money.
Mm-hmm.
You can't make that in the United States. Even if you put in a way in Las Vegas or New York or L.A. or whatever, what's the gate going to be? I don't even think an Inoue gate in America, in anywhere you could think of, wouldn't exceed $5 million. He's doing $20 million over there. And like you said, he's fighting in the biggest arena, Saitama Super Arena, now the Tokyo Dome, which hasn't hosted a boxing event since one of the most famous fights in the history of the sport when Buster Douglas upset Mike Tyson in 1990. Think about how long that has been and that facility has been there. So, again, all due respect to Sean, he swung and missed big time in this one.
You can say that a fighter can't truly connect with an American fan base until he regularly fights in the U.S. I think there's truth to that. But
why does he care about the American fan base?
He does. No, that's my point. This is kind of my point. Like, Inoue is not out there saying America loves me. Like, Inoue is not out there saying, like, I am recognizable wherever I go. Inoue is about making the most money he possibly can. And to your point, what he makes in Japan dwarfs everything he could potentially make in the U.S. And if you look up the weight classes, Dan, let's say at some point he jumps up to 126. All those title holders, if they want to fight Inoue, they're going over to Japan. Right now, let's say he jumped to 130, hypothetically. All those title holders to fight Inoue, they're going over to Japan. You really have to go to, like, and it's not going to happen, I'm not saying this, but like the whole Gervonta Davis stuff when people throwing that out on social media. If for some reason Inoue woke up and said, you know what, my body can handle it, I'm going to fight at 135, I'll fight Gervonta. That's a fight you could make in the U.S. in Vegas and do a massive number at the live gate because you'd have a big, big, big cross-section of people coming in for that. But that's the only fight from 135 on down that makes any sense for Inoue to go anywhere but in Japan.
And the other thing about it is this. You say, like, he's not looking to become a legend in America, but there's the boxing fans, if you will, of America. They know him. They follow him. And I have to say, there's something sort of, like, it's become, like, a fun sort of thing to, like, Inoue's fighting. I'm getting up at 4 in the morning on, or, you know, East Coast time. He gets in the ring around 7 o'clock in the morning, 6:30 in the morning, whatever it is, to make sure you wake up early to watch that fight. I mean, I've done that in his recent fights. I, you know, make sure I get up. You know, I don't maybe wake up for the very first bout, but I'm up in time for him to be on live and, you know, pop the TV on because I got the app in my television or put on my phone laying in bed. I mean, it's like a beautiful thing. So It's almost like, you know, you go on social media, it's 7 in the morning on some random Monday and everybody's talking about Inoue anyway. I mean, there's not a lot of guys that can generate that kind of buzz on social media in boxing by fighting on an unusual time. In the United States, anyway, it's highly unusual for there to be, at least in this current day and age, to be major fights on a Monday, a Tuesday. But in the 70s and 80s, that was common in America. In Japan, weekday fights are the norm, far more so than fighting a big time fight on a Saturday night like here in the United States. So, you know, I'd say this, you know, it's time to stop being just totally American centric. I'm American. I'd love to see him fight here. Obviously, I'd love to see the heavyweight big fights be in the United States, not necessarily all of them being in Saudi Arabia, but I get it. It's a big global community in the boxing. It's a big, big world out there and it's a global sport. It's not the NBA where they have all the games in America. And maybe once in a while they send a teams overseas to have a game or like they've done occasionally with Major League Baseball or the NFL. Boxing is everywhere. And that's one of the reasons it's such a great sport because you can have some random guy from Japan become the pound for pound king. You could have some unknown little guy like Manny Pacquiao emerge from nowhere and become a global icon in pound for pound and become one of the richest, most legacy fighters in the history of the sport. That's what Inoue's on his way is to doing. Whether he's got the big fan base or the money in America is completely irrelevant. It doesn't matter. And so all the Americans who want to hold their noses up and say, well, he needs to fight here. I say, you know what? go jump off a cliff, baby.
Yeah, Luis Neri, for context, his last U.S. fight was fought at the Fox Theater in Pomona. All right, so I mean, and no disrespect to guys that are fighting there, but you're not coming over to fight a guy that last fought in the Fox Theater. And like, let's say he goes to 126 and Top Rank's like, you know, here's Luis Lopez. Like, you know, you're not fighting Luis Lopez in the U.S. or Europe. You're fighting him in Japan, where you can make eight figures.
At least with that Neri fight that you mentioned in that Fox Theater, I and many others picked that fight against Hovhannissian as the 2023 fight of the year.
Great fight.
It was a great fight, but again, the gate was probably what, like a ham sandwich? I mean, come on.
And look, fighters that are in these weight classes aren't stupid. Like, what did it take? Stephen Fulton, like 10 seconds to agree to go over to Japan? There was no arguing there. There was no back and forth about let's bring Inoue to the U.S. Everybody knew where the money was. PBC knew where the money was. Fulton knew where the money was. He took it. Good for him. Good for anyone that goes over there and gets in the ring with that guy, because that guy is a beast. That's the other part of it, Dan. Like, his fights aren't boring. Like, we get up at 6 a.m., 7 a.m. because they're awesome. Because every time he gets in the ring, he is going all out. He's going to war. And that Neri fight, another fight we can talk about down the line, that's going to be a great fight as long as it lasts. Because Neri's coming to fight, too.
Especially because Neri's got such a... He's sort of like enemy number one in Japan because of his past history.
Fighting. I love it, yeah.
That's going to be tremendous. I mean, I've been following Inoue literally since he basically turned pro. I mean, watching his first professional world title fights when he was down at 108 pounds in, like, I want to say maybe his like eighth fight or something like that. So I've been fortunate to be aware of him since the beginning, and he's just gotten better and better and better and blossomed. I mean, I didn't think he was going to be at that time. You're like, okay, this guy is really good. Am I going to see him as a guy that wins titles in all these weight classes and be an undisputed champion in two divisions, be a lock first bout Hall of Famer? Have like my own internal argument with myself about whether I should have him number one or number two, pound for pound. I mean, he's made it, and he doesn't need America to do so.
You know what might bring him to the U.S.? I take it back. I got one more, and you can throw this. You can tell me I'm crazy. Bam Rodriguez.
You're crazy.
Bam Rodriguez.
That's a good, don't get me wrong, that's a heck of a fight, but I think Bam Rodriguez would be more than willing to pack up and go over there.
Probably.
He's got a close relationship with Tekken Boxing, Mr. Honda in Japan.
Yeah, he does.
Robert Garcia, you know, who's his manager and trainer. They can make that into a big-time fight over there also.
He does. Now, I'm just thinking of names, right? Like, that's the only name. And if Bam beats Estrada, his name gets a little bit bigger. Maybe he goes to 118, wins a belt. I don't know. That's the only name I could think of that makes sense for a U.S.-based fight. But I'm with you, ultimately. He probably goes over there and collects a big, fat paycheck to go to war with that guy. All right, Dan, check out Dan's newsletter, Fight Freaks Unite. You can subscribe on his Substack. You can subscribe on his social media channels as well. Dan, always great to catch up, man. I appreciate it.
You bet, Chris. Thank you very much.
And when we come back, my conversation with Devin Haney. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddy, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A lot has changed since then. You are now a undisputed world champion, a two-division world champion. How much better are you?
Former undisputed.
But I'm just giving you the credit for that, being undisputed world champion. But how much better are you right now than the man that hopped in that ring 4 years ago?
Levels above of that guy. You know, at that time, you know, I thought I was the best thing, you know, out, the best thing smoking. And, you know, I would, you know, kill that guy then. So, you know, I'm levels above.
You faced Regis Progre this past December, and Regis came into that fight an accomplished guy, arguably the top man at 140 pounds. And it was about as lopsided as it could possibly get. And it was
everything I said in that face-off with me, you, and him, I said I was going
to
do.
I was going to get to that, but since you bring it up, you did. You said you were going to hurt him. And you said, now this is what I remember vividly, you said, Regis, after this fight, you're going to be saying I'm a great fighter. And sure enough, in the ring, right after the fight, he said, you're a great fighter.
That mother he better than what I thought, not going to lie. I'm going to give him credit. I'm going to give Bill credit. I'm going to give Team Handy credit.
Ryan Garcia won't be no different. He's going to say, bro, I knew you were a great fighter. Because he knows that. He knows the level that I'm on. He knows what I bring to the table. We heard him say this before. Ryan Garcia has known me since I was 10 years old, 11 years old. So he knows what type of fighter that I am. So he can say what he want to say. We know that he's gonna bark. He's going to downplay me, the type of fighter that I am. But after April 20th, he's going to say, I knew how great he was.
You mentioned how long you guys have known each other. When was the first time that you heard the name Ryan Garcia?
The first time I ever heard of Ryan Garcia, I was on YouTube just looking up, like, you know, like the amateur circuit, the guys, you know, silver gloves, like, you know, around that time. And that's when I seen the name Ryan Garcia. And then I ended up fighting him. Our first fight was at the Junior Golden Gloves. Mm.
What do you remember about that fight?
I didn't have that many fights, didn't have much experience, and Ryan Garcia had a lot of experience, and he had a big following, you know, the Latinos, and, you know, we fought in Mesquite, so all that, but it was the whole region, they knew Ryan Garcia, so they were going crazy for him, but I didn't know, and so they were like, nobody knew me, no, they thought he was going to just blow me out the water, and it was a good fight. Ryan won the fight, so that's when I, like, really, like, it woke me up to you know, the amateur boxing scene. People started to know me. People started to, like, oh, okay, that was a guy that I put up a great fight. Like, nobody, like I said, they expected him to blow me out. And they were like, oh, okay, that's the guy that fought Ryan Garcia. He's good, da-da-da-da. And the rest was history after that. We fought, you know, five more times after that one. To be real with you, though, Ryan won when we were little kids because he just had the experience. And when we got older, I put it on him, especially the last fight.
What happened the last fight?
I gave him an eight count. I beat the shit out of him.
Do you remember thinking, even then, when you're 16 years old, like, we're going to see each other in the pros someday?
You know, I mean, so many kids that was good in the amateurs that just turned out to not even be nothing in the pros. So, you know, you don't really know.
Is he the most dangerous fighter that you faced up until this point?
You know, Ryan Garcia has power, of course. But Regis Progre has power too. Linares has power. A lot of these guys have had, you know, power. I'm just on a different level. So, you know, he could bring all the power that he wants. I'm gonna bring the skills and the IQ that I got and show him, handicap him of his power like I do.
You do have a ability through your skills and the preparation you put in with the people on your team to take away the best weapon that an opponent has. Regis Broger didn't land any left hands of consequence on you back in December. How challenging do you think it's going to be to stay away from the left hand of Ryan Garcia?
When I set out to do something, if I don't want to get hit, I'm not going to get hit. I'm a handicap, Ryan. You know, he gonna fight with, you know, both arms behind his back. Not one, but both.
Your dad said this fight has become personal over the last few weeks.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
You know, he crossed the line. He said some stuff that just wasn't right. One of the main things that he said that I can't is that, you know, he spoke on my religion. You know, it's boxing. You can say what you want to say, but he know what he said about my religion.
What was it he said that?
He know what he said.
Was this to you directly or something on social media?
No, he said it to somebody and he got back to me.
No. The face off you guys had in Las Vegas, I think a lot of people were surprised it got as heated as it did, because it felt like for a long time, even though you guys were adversaries, that you were friends. Was that fair to say?
No, I mean, you know, we were rivals since young kids. You know, it was, you know, somewhat mutual respect at a point, but all that respect go out the door now. And, you know, it's personal. It's no longer friends. And, you know, these guys, they talk this talk, and then after they want to hug and, you know, talk about, oh, it was just this, it was just that. But he crossed the line. And after this, it's none of that. Me and Ryan Garcia don't never gotta, you know, talk again. It's not, you know, I know once he loses, once I make an example out of him, he's gonna come, he's gonna try to say all that. But no, let's leave it at what it is now.
So when this fight ends, if you win, let's say in the same way you win or won against Regis Progre, there won't be the traditional kind of, hey, big hug, handshake, that kind of stuff?
No.
All because of what he said that got back to you?
Yes.
The last few years, you've been the more accomplished of the two guys. You've won the world titles. You've won in multiple divisions. His star has risen a different way, where he's, you know, fought a big pay-per-view against Gervonta Davis. What have you thought as kind of his star has risen opposite of yours?
It's pretty much been the same. His biggest fight was Gervonta. You know, that was only his, you know, fight that was bigger than mine. It's nothing else. Everything has been, you know, it aligned.
Is this a difficult fight for you?
I'm going to go in there and I'm going to make it as easy as possible. Like I said, handicap him and make this guy look ordinary like he really is.
It feels like your confidence grows every single fight when we talk. Going back to the JoJo Diaz fight, I remember sitting there when you and JoJo were opposite each other and said, you better not disrespect me, you better know what you're getting in with. You won that fight, controlled that fight. Really, ever since then, it feels like I've seen your confidence growing. Is that fair to say?
I mean, that's what happens when you're in big fights. You know, you get that experience and you gain confidence, you gain momentum. So, of course.
Well, Devin, we'll see you April 20th, live on DAZN.
See you there.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Dan Rayfield and Devin Haney for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. And I will see you maybe with Sergio Mora later this week.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.